Hello and welcome to High Velocity Business Radio. I'm Sandra Bean and I'm here with my co-host,
Desiree Scales.
Hi, Desiree. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Sander?
I'm great. We have some awesome guests today.
I know. I'm really excited. We've got a lot going on today.
Yes, we do.
And it's right up your alley as a new entrepreneur. Right?
That's right. Been in business now for about 3 months. Yeah. So maybe I'm going to get a lot of advice today from these
exactly.
guys.
Exactly. Exactly. So, all right. So first up, we're just going to start and go right into it. Sorry, Kevin, we're skipping you today.
It's okay. No problem.
I know,
whatsoever.
Because we've got a lot to talk about. But we've got Mark Little. He's the CEO and founder of Diversified Funding Services and has been doing that for 15 years, about as long as I've been doing web design. So
that's right.
You've got a lot of experience under your belt. And we've got Obam Boam. He is CEO and decorated Marine.
Yes.
You have got a great story to share, a lot of information. And you also speak at Fortune 500 companies, Chevron, Walmart, and help them with their strategy and
Indeed.
Planning. So there's a lot of great information. I know you've been featured on a lot of news stations, and I can't wait to get to your story as well. So to start things off, Mark, tell mm-hmm. us about your new project, because this is really exciting, and this is how we all met, was through your project. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to let you introduce that.
Absolutely. I'd love to. Society of Young Entrepreneurs is something that sort of come about over years of my experiences being self-employed. As I told you, our first meeting, I grew up in a family-owned business. So entrepreneurship was, I guess, in my blood. Watching what my father accomplished from a very young age, realized that is what I want to do is if you can make it for someone else, you can make it for your own business.
Right.
So I went off and tried to go conquer the world and left my father's business at 20, and I was going to go make my multi-millions of dollars, and then the life lessons began.
Mm-hmm.
And reading books like Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, I think we'd all agree that's kind of the 101 entry reading suggestion, and then the books just go from there. And looking back when I first read that book in the early days, a lot of it I didn't really get. You fail your way to success. That's not something that sounds very fun. But as you go through and you experience things, and I'll sort of put my own words together of what Napoleon Hill said, that when something bad happens, if you're able to keep your eyes open, something of equal or greater value will open up. You just have to be willing to look for that opportunity and learn how to think it through and see if it's worth putting your energy towards. And some of my biggest successes came after some of my biggest failures, and was not able to see that until I look back. As I went out, I was always the type of person that when I saw opportunity, I did not care what anyone thought about my decision. You know, getting mm-hmm. laughed at, made fun of, whatever. I'm going for it. I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to make this happen. And sometimes they would and sometimes they would not, but I did definitely learn from that. You also make contacts from something that failed that ended up being a good relationship later. So to wrap that all up and get it to Society of Young Entrepreneurs, as I got older, I'm 49 now, been married 24 years, and I was able to have this inner desire of wanting to give back, wanting to be able to go out there and help others sort of not go through the same mistakes, help them have their failures in a more compressed time and get to success through the failure. And the failures come from your mistakes as a person.
Right.
And learning the lessons the hard way. But to be able to teach the mindsets necessary to be successful, and I'm wanting to just go out there and share what I've learned personally and hopefully make a difference in somebody's lives that are just starting to be an entrepreneur.
So Mark, how are you doing that exactly? What's your delivery method? Are you teaching classes? What does the society do exactly?
Well, that's where Obama and I, when we met, we actually met through our for-profit business, and quickly became friends very rapidly, and really, you know, got past all the surface stuff and got down to the meat and potatoes of who we are as people, what our passions are. And I won't steal any of Obama's thunder, because his story is quite tremendous. And when every time he shares a story, which he does, you know, at our for-profit events, I'm very humbled at what he's been through and what he's accomplished. And he's the essence of the things that we're teaching through Society of Young Entrepreneurs, which we do have curriculum, we do have a program. And we have the way we have joined together, it's all one. Soy is not without him. Soy's not without me. It's kind of interesting how it's come about, how we've completed this formation of, because I was originally going to start it just as, you know, a for-profit. And then when we met and I was sharing it with him, he has had a passion further back than that of wanting to go and share and teach and do the same thing. And it was sort of a collision of, wow, all right, this is going to happen now and it's going to happen together. So Obam has taught, as you had mentioned some of the things earlier, he's already been out there and he's taught some of this higher level of thinking programs. I sort of come in and my passion comes out for, you know, just the things that I've learned, the mindsets you need to be in when you're approaching entrepreneurship. And we all have heard people say, hey, how would you like to be your own boss? Mm-hmm. Everybody raises their hand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to be my own boss. And then you ask the question, what kind of employee will you be to yourself?
Yeah.
Great question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of scams out there. There's a lot of get rich quick type of things out there. And I want to get rid of that.
Yeah.
I want to get and teach young people that avoid and run from that kind of stuff, because it's all over.
Right.
The place.
It's empty promises. That's mm-hmm. all it can offer.
All they can.
Yeah.
How are you marketing to this group of entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs? How do they find out about you?
Well, it started out just really word of mouth is the grassroots of it. But also have reached out and starting to reach out the SBDC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And go and talk to them. Some of the high schools have a DECA program.
Andy Freed up there.
Yeah. Our friend Andy. Yes.
Matter of fact, just like
Drew.
Talk, yeah, Drew, exactly. Yes. Cannot wait to get the chance to speak to him and, mm-hmm. and get a chance to offer. But another friend of ours that Obama actually was in the, you know, has served in the military with, his brother is an ROTC student in a high school in Macon.
Huh?
And so as of this morning, it was confirmed. So Thursday week, I'll be traveling to Macon to speak to 190 students in the ROTC program.
Excellent.
That's how it has started. Yeah. And it sort of is taking on a life of its own. Mm-hmm. And I'll, you know, shared when our first meeting, Desiree, mm-hmm. of just when I came across her website, I just knew in my heart, and I'm like, wow, there's just something here. And I literally did not talk to any other company, and I just waited and hammered and emailed and hope she's reading it. I hope she sees this.
Yeah.
And it's just been an awesome experience already.
Excellent. Excellent.
And I was excited when I found out what you were doing to help you. And so through our Bella Cares program at Bella Web Design, we donated a website to
Absolutely.
The Society of Young Entrepreneurs. We do three of those a year, and you guys are the first one for 2014. So we're really excited about that. Thank
Yay
you.
For us.
And I thank you so much.
No
it.
Problem.
Yeah, for us. It's always, and this is Obam.
Yep.
It's always great when you set your mind to something and don't let anything interrupt you towards, you know, the end goal.
So tell us about that, because you have a lot of experience in life doing this.
You know, the end goal for us is being able to have an 18-year-old child upon graduation from high school, getting into college, truly have a significant choice mm-hmm. And a focus and a vision, pretty much a vision statement or a definiteness of purpose, if you may, on what they want from life. And they know from that point on that they can direct themselves in the path of where they want to go, if it's traditional schooling or business, and they continue in school but know what their end goal is and work towards that.
Right.
What Mark and I discovered almost a year ago now is probably about 95% of the people don't have an end state destination where they want to be. Everyone said they want to be an entrepreneur. you know, the root word in itself means risk taker. So
yeah,
the person that takes the most risk, you know, it's always said, you know, gets the you know, the largest reward. But coming back to that, from age 16 and on is where it's the age of challenge. Okay. And that's when a young teenage boy or girl starts to really question what mom and dad is teaching, because they're starting to realize things are happening, hormones are changing, and all kinds of stuff is happening. And so they start to think more or so outside the box than what mom and dad is teaching, because sometimes as adults we forgot how creative we were.
Yeah.
And the creative process is lost in, you know, repetitive things of life. You're becoming a parent and you have to take responsibility. But sometimes if we all go back, even as parents, into what that goal was for us as a child, what we really wanted, and if we stayed focused on that goal, it might have been some clarity. I always share a story that, you know, when I met my wife, first day I met her, my intention was to marry her. I told her that. She thought I was crazy. 10 years later, she's the happiest woman in the world. Go figure.
Love it.
Or at least that's my version of the story.
Right. We'll get her in here next week.
Yeah, exactly. But it was the, you know, Mark and I, our passions really collided in what we really wanted for the kids and what we wanted for the next generation. The Society of Young Entrepreneurs is for the young entrepreneur. So you can be 40, 50 years old being a young entrepreneur. But right now, our main priority and focus on the next generation, which is 18 to 24.
Right.
Because those are the very fertile age that you can get to and really make an impact. Mm-hmm. And I believe, you know, by age 25, the average person who have given up on their goals and dreams because it's being taken away by responsibility, whether, you know, being a parent early or coming out of school.
Yeah.
And like Mark had mentioned, you know, coming out to find out the trials of life has been there. You tend to lose a lot of that focus and that childlike drive towards it. But if you're able to stay focused through everything else, you can keep one definite chief aim of what you're going for and you always get it. There's a story I read years ago on like Olympic trainers, like the Olympic arrow shooters. They start to shoot at competition at 50 yards. But when they practice, they start practicing at 5 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll shoot, you know, 20 arrows, bullseyes at 5 yards. And they'll go back to 10, 15, and 20, and 25.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If they miss anyone in there, they go back. What they're doing is they're training the brain the entire time not to miss, how to have success. So if we start teaching youngsters how to be an entrepreneur, that to design them to understand that you will come into adversity, but here's how you train for the adversity. First of all, it has to be a sound mind. And that's what we're really doing, is before they have success, the precursor to it is really having having them in that happiness state of where they want to be, but then showing them what it's going to be like. We have a program that really dedicates them to understanding how to be an entrepreneur internally.
Right.
And then everything will show externally from there.
Wow. That's great. Really good information. And you are an author of The Philosophy of Success, A Journey Through Idioms. And you're working on your next book, The Journey Home. Wow. That's great. The grass is not growing under your feet.
No.
Busy guy.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, so through the book, are you using that kind of as a textbook for the kids, or, you know, is that just something that complements the workshops that you're doing? How much of that are you using?
The book will definitely complement the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature behind the book, The Philosophy of Success, is really in order to have success, it doesn't come from the things we do outwardly. It comes from how you think.
Right.
So if your philosophy is off, everything else will be. And what I kind of see as a definition of our philosophy is basically whatever we hold or believe and how it affects what we do, or how we let anything else affect what we do, that's our philosophy. So if you're kind of structured or in nature to think the right way, then you'll just generally get to the right decisions and make the right decisions, and it'll basically produce the right actions that you need. The book, it's called, you know, Philosophy of Success, A Journey Through Idioms, because my parents always spoke to me in idioms when I was a child. So it's almost like I had to study the encyclopedia to understand what they were talking about. as I got older and I grew up, my mom was Catholic. My dad was very deep in the faith, so I studied the Bible a lot with them.
Right.
So the book is really written with biblical truths from a real biblical perspective, those idioms and stories,
right.
some of the modern stories that we know today, with a philosophy based on personal development. So it's a journey through that, that by the time you get to the end, the one thing that you will learn as a person is how to have resolve.
Mm-hmm.
And is that one of the characteristics that you believe makes up a good entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think that is the key factor and ingredient that anyone can have is resolve. For myself, you know, my time in the military, I spent 17 years, was injured in Iraq, was actually paralyzed from the waist down, in a wheelchair for 9 months, couldn't walk, couldn't talk, at least that's what the doctors said, and of right. course today that's proven to be a lie. My resolve was I didn't see myself being that person. My end state was I'm going to be walking again, talking again, having more kids, having a bountiful life. And my definite purpose in life was not just to walk again. It was to run and play with my kids.
Right.
So all of that had to be reverse engineered through a philosophy, through how I thought, through my faith, through my belief. All those things are kind of tied into the book. And at the end of it, I have my resolve today. And that was to be living a happy, healthy, fervent life and, you know, having kids. And we have two daughters, but next year we're starting a second journey of kids, the wife and I. So,
oh, exciting. Wow.
It's interesting because this is a time of year that people talk about resolutions. And the first, it's weird because I think one of the first thing that comes to mind in most people when you say resolutions is breaking thereof, right? Mm-hmm. So almost out of the second sentence after my New Year's resolution, I didn't do it because. But that's just the opposite of resolve.
Exactly. It's a continuous fight. I always set, when it comes to the New Year's resolution, I set mine in October.
I love it. That's awesome.
But why? Why? But
because comes November, you start to make excuses about how much you're going to eat, and then maybe in December you'll get started. Then comes Christmas, and in January you're already way too overweight if it's a weight loss goal that you have.
Mm-hmm.
If you start before any of the challenges come, by November, you have a determined mindset, and you don't want to ruin what you've already put in for. So you
right.
continue through, and if you make it through November, you're excited for December.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're excited mm-hmm. for December, December is going to be excited for you. So come January, you're already 90 days to your plan to say, what is my goal for the rest of the year? You can actually sit there and say, you know what? I'm ahead. And I just need to continue.
Right.
So you just resolve every day.
You created the habits.
Yeah, it's that mindset that you're putting there beforehand so you're not struggling through the
change. Exactly.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
It's kind of the reasons 99% of the gyms get gym memberships in abundance of maybe 98% increase, and by March, they go down.
Right.
Because they know that cycle. It happens to each and every one of us.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So, Mark, what advice do you have for young entrepreneurs out there?
My advice would be, Obama and I were actually talking on the way up here, and my personality is just, I'm just a transparent person. I just like to share what's on my heart, the way I feel, the experiences I've had. And what Obama was talking about in the book that he has written is the mindset is the key.
But how do you get a young person, if they've had a big struggle, let's say, in their life, how do you help them turn that around and change that mindset?
By being transparent mm-hmm. and sharing, you know, just my personal struggles. And working on myself has been the biggest challenge of my life. And working on yourself is something that happens daily.
Yeah.
And there's times when you go through self-doubt, even as an entrepreneur, even when you're doing your best to go out there and you know, get up and conquer the world, it's all on you. Mm-hmm. And there's days I don't even want to get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's days that the monster shows up. I'm not afraid to share this. I've had an issue with depression my whole life.
Okay.
You know, it runs in my mom's side of the family. I mean, I've seen it. It's a real disease. It's a real thing that a lot of people just say, hey, man, get over it. What's your problem? Because they're not able to step inside your brain.
Right.
You know, if you have an amputated leg, someone can see you have an amputated leg and it was just freshly amputated, they're not going to say, just get off the couch and go run. What's your problem?
Right.
So when you truly and legitimately have an issue that you struggle with it's important that you go out there and you share that and not be afraid to share that, but say, but here's what you have to do. You have to work on yourself. And that gets back to where we were sharing earlier. Jeff Olson, who he's a CEO and a founder of a company that we're with, he created a Live Happy magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And people that have heard Live Happy will now start seeing this on publications.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally about, like Sean Anker wrote, The Happiness Advantage. It's a Harvard study, talks about positive psychology. And Obama's book even touches on that. Is we all have things that we struggle with. And when you become an entrepreneur, especially at a young age, and you come across something that you believe in with all your heart and you want to go for it,
right,
the first thing that's going to happen, and it goes back to Think and Grow Rich, the 500 most successful people, way back when that was written, your biggest, you know, adversities will come from friends and family and neighbors.
Yep.
So when you go out there and you speak it to the world and you say, man, I'm going to go do this, you're going to get beat up, kicked down, laughed at, and the first thing you're going to do is crawl back in a hole and go, what am I thinking?
Mm. Well, what I find is when you put it out there, like, I'm going to go do this, for me anyway, then it's like it's almost like I got to go do it. And I agree with you that people – that it's a huge risk to be taking when you say that. But mm-hmm. then from and personally, that also – I feel like I get on the hook with that.
And hold you accountable.
Right. I mean, your friends hold you accountable.
I'm holding you accountable.
Well, but there's a good way and a bad way to hold accountable. You have positive people, and that gets back to where I love talking about – you know, you're the sum total of the five people you spend the most time with.
Right. Interesting.
So when I hang around people like Obama and other people that are striving for the same thing, it's not that you're doing it from an arrogant standpoint of I want to avoid negative people. It comes from self-preservation. It comes from I'm working so hard on myself.
Right.
I'm working so hard on trying to be positive because – and Jeff Olson talks about this a lot. You don't have to look for negative. It's waiting on you when you wake up.
Turn on the TV.
Turn on the TV.
That's all you gotta do.
Open your eyes.
Open your eyes.
Turn
on
the internet.
Go to the checkout stand and look at what's
there.
On there. In the tabloids and all the obsession people have with what these movie stars are doing and this and that. All you're exposed to in this world is negative stuff. And people are so willing to scream and holler and for other people's lives and talk about what this star's doing, what this athlete's doing and all that, but they don't scream for themselves. They don't cheer for themselves. They don't stand up and believe for themselves. So it's important to have people that will hold you accountable but in a positive manner. And as the more that I focus on trying to better myself and work on being a happy person, which is a daily event, and you hang around people that are like-minded that help pull you up, then you start seeing just how messed up the world is. So that's my answer to my best advice to young entrepreneurs is, who do you hang out with?
Yeah.
Who do you spend your time with?
Right.
I always open up a talk when I'm speaking with young people is who likes to be treated bad? And no one raises their hand. You may have a cut up every once in a while that will chunk a hand up. But no one likes to be treated bad. So since no one likes to be treated bad, how do you treat yourself? How do you talk to yourself? What's your self-talk? And the more time you spend there in self-talk and you don't have someone that will be able to reach deep and help pull you out of that because they know what it's like, they've been there, that's what you do is you associate, you change who you hang out with, you change the way you think. Because that monster is going to try to get everybody.
Right.
Because that's just the condition that we have. So really in a nutshell, when I sit there and I always have to say, if you look 5 years down the road, where do you see yourself outside acts of God? Because you have to say that because stuff does happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You right. know, so outside acts of God, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And that the choices you make today is going to be where you're at in 5 years. And so it has to start now and start today. So if you make good choices each and every day, it gets back to even the New Year's resolutions working out. You got to do the right things each and every day, and compounded over time, you'll wake up and be where you want to be.
Well, and I think that the choice that you make is to be happy and be in gratitude, you know, always. It's not easy, but yeah, be grateful. Mark just held up his planner and it says, I am grateful. And I think being grateful brings joy, you know, inherently in a lot of ways. So great insights from you guys. I really appreciate it. Really,
welcome.
Really
been a pleasure.
I'm glad you guys were here today. So we are going to take it in a completely different direction.
And now for something completely different.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's right. We've got Rob Woomer here with Stonehill Investors. And Rob is also working with Bella on his site and talking about real estate, investment, and so tell us about Stonehill Investors.
Well, sure. Before I do, I wish I'd known you guys 25 years ago. As an entrepreneur myself,
yep.
I had a lot of different directions before I found what I really like. So.
See? And I think we can all say that, you know, as absolutely. Entrepreneurs, as older entrepreneurs with a little more tread, you know, under our tires. But
right.
You've definitely found, I think, your passion for
Absolutely. And Stonehill Investors is an investment platform. It's an affiliate with Peachtree Hotel Group, which is a fairly large organization, owns about 50 assets, owns and manages hotels in a limited service and select service space. Over time, the founders of the company, Greg Friedman, Mitul Patel, and Jatin Desai, have built up a business that has a great investment management piece where they effectively run other folks' money. So as we've built that, or as they've built that, I worked with them. I was a banker for a long time, a number of years. We decided, we're really good at helping people invest their money. And it's not sexy. We're not going to change lives, but we are good fiduciaries of capital. And so we've built this company, Stonehill Investments, that is responsible for aggregating that capital and then investing it in a way that does the right thing by the individuals that are investing with us and tries to get them the best return we can.
Right.
Give us an idea of what type of property that we're talking about is from an investment perspective. Is it apartments? Is it
right? It's hotels, limited service, okay. And select service, which is premium brands that are Hilton brands, Marriott brands, Starwood names, Courtyard, Spring Hill Suites, Element Hotel, things mm-hmm. like that. That are not the full-service boxes, the big hotels, but are assets that people, use every day, business travelers. They're located all over the country. Right. Our portfolio is all over the country. And the performance of these assets is highly tied to the economy. And so we've been in an upturn, I guess, since obviously we had a big recession, hit everybody very hard. It's been a slow recovery. But, the prognosis is, the estimate that everybody has is that the economy is going to continue to grow. Our assets are growing as well. So we're delivering great returns. We expect to continue to do that for our investors.
So why did you guys focus on hotels and not other real estate?
Good question. Greg, Jatin, and Mitul have been in the business all their lives.
Just experience.
From mm-hmm. different aspects. Greg was on the lending side, so there's a lot of experience there. Jatin and Mitul grew up in his family business for them. I've actually had experience with a lot of different asset classes, the apartments, the office buildings, shopping centers. But at the end of the day, the hotel's very interesting. It's not just a real estate investment. It's an asset that you have to run every day. You get new occupancy every day. People leave, they come mm-hmm. back. So you've got to be good at it. It's not like, an apartment building. If it's in the right location, people are just going to stick around for whatever reason. Office, people are in 5 and 10 year leases. There's not much you can do there. But with a hotel, you have the ability to every single day affect the outcome of that asset.
Upsell, occupancy rates, all those things.
Sure, sure. And again, in addition to our ability to affect that outcome, the broad economy is really on a nice tear. So we think those two things combined should generate some pretty nice returns over the next 3 to 5 years.
And where do you get the assets? Are you generally buying them from another owner and consolidating them, or another company such as yourself? I mean, where do they?
Well, from all different places. We do a little bit of development. So where we see a need for some demand and we can get it in at the right cost basis, we'll develop. But primarily we're buying assets that have some value add component where we see it's either being run wrong or the physical box needs to be updated or there's something wrong with the asset that can be fixed.
Gotcha.
And so we're buying them from individuals, sometimes larger companies. Even we've bought some assets from public REITs. We're also talks with banks and lenders that maybe foreclose where some the asset might be great, might even be run well, but it might be just overcapitalized. So we get those types of deals too.
Gotcha. So how do you invest? Talk about that.
Well, we really have two strategies in the how. One is we buy the asset. It's an equity investment. Mm-hmm. We buy it. We own it. We run it. And those are, again, the premium branded names that I threw up before.
Right.
The other way we invest is through a debt vehicle of some sort, whether it's a mezzanine equity, preferred equity, a bridge loan, some sort of an investment where we may have the a lower basis, where we're not comfortable or for whatever reason we can't or we won't mm-hmm. own 100% of the asset. We'll own the debt piece, which might take us only up to 80, 85% ownership. So we feel good at that basis. It performs well. We're still getting, you know, returns that we typically underwrite high teens, low 20s type returns. So very good returns for investors where there's a cash component and then there's some upside on the back end as well.
Right.
So the real question is, how do we get in on it?
Yeah, right.
That sounds like a pretty good return on investment compared to my 401k.
It is interesting. I mean, you know, frankly, Stonehill Investors' job is to aggregate capital, and I always tell the guys I've got the easiest job amongst us because it is very hard to make money in the market today, no matter what you invest in. Last year was fantastic. The equity markets did extremely well. The odds of getting those types of returns, you know, year in and year out are very, very low in the stock market. In the hotel space, when you're doing value add like we are, that's how we underwrite. And every deal we do is underwritten to that 20% plus or minus annual return.
But in all seriousness, are you also looking for investors?
You know, the best way to do that would be to go to the StonehillInvestors.com website.
Right.
This is the proper time to say that.
That's right.
Right, Desiree?
I didn't take the hint,
almost,
and I got it now.
All right.
But yeah, it'll have information there, and of course you have to be a qualified investor, and there's some forms there. But that's a great way to get more information, and of course anybody from the company is available anytime to talk to people who want to invest.
Right, exactly. So you know, what's your opinion on the potential for appreciation and cash flows in this market, and you know, where are we going with this? What's the future? That's kind of two questions. So
right. Well. You know, the economy crashed. It took about 18 months to get from the high to the low for the hotel space.
Yeah.
The key metric is called RevPAR. It's revenue per available room. And it, you know, again, took 18 months to get down there. It's a component of the average daily rate and the occupancy.
Right.
And in the past 38 or so months, we've recovered occupancy to about where it was in 2007. And we have got the ADR, the rate, really hasn't moved much. Mm-hmm. It's really just been driven by occupancy. We've just, maybe in the last month or so, seen where rates are moving up. And that's been, you know, higher demand, again, from the business traveler. What we hadn't seen during that entire time of down and up is new development.
Okay.
And so the economy has grown. There's always new concepts. There's, you know, people like newer hotels generally.
Right.
So if we've got the ability to go in and refresh a hotel or buy something, we know there's not going to be direct competition within a certain amount of time before people start building again. There's not really a lot of building still going on today. So the potential is very strong to continue this uptick that we've had. The 20% annual return that we underwrite is usually a component, maybe half cash on cash. So, you know, you're looking at a 10% annual dividend, as it were, and then the rest is really in the upside.
Right. Wow. And it's interesting that you say that there has not been a lot of new development. Do you think that's going to change?
It always changes.
Yeah.
It's a cycle.
Yeah.
You know, as we see our RevPAR increase, mm-hmm. as we see you know, the demand and just the general economy go up and more people traveling, other folks will see that too. And suddenly a project which maybe didn't make sense, you couldn't get nice returns on it, you know, this year or last year, all of a sudden they can underwrite to those rents and those occupancies and say, well, now we should build. The problem is, like in any real estate, it'll get overbuilt at some point. That's just what happens.
Right.
Too many people get in.
Yeah.
I will say, though, this is a very unusual cycle. It's been a long time that no one's been developing, and I think we probably expect that you know, maybe people will be cautious this time. Who knows?
Right.
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, talking about the redevelopment, is that people look for different things. I just saw yesterday in the paper how mini bars are being torn out. of many hotels. And you know, I'm sure that there's a trend towards something else. Like for me, it's nice to have a power cord next to the nightstand so I can charge my phone overnight.
It's little things like that. Yeah. And the brands themselves, you know, Hilton, Marriott, those guys really set what those standards are. And the consumer has changed. I mean, we want outlets, right? A few years back, we all wanted, we wanted an ironing board, which you couldn't find 10 years ago, right? The mini bar is not profitable.
Right.
But they have invented, you know, it used to be limited service. You either had full service or limited service, which really meant no service. Mm-hmm. Today, we've got select service, which is give folks what they really want and don't give them things they don't want or need. So where they've ripped out the mini bar, they might have put in a bar in the lobby that they didn't have before,
right,
and have limited hours, maybe only be open a few hours, offer breakfast in the morning, that kind of thing. But that's really driven by the brand, and that's, you know, we really like Hilton and Marriott, and we like Hyatt, we like Starwood, we like IHG, we like others, but Hilton and Marriott really seem to have their pulse on the consumer, and so we like affiliating with them.
I have to ask you a question that's way off the script, and we can always edit this out if needed, but...
There's no editing.
Okay. No. Looking over to Kevin. but in all seriousness, so I traveled recently, and I tried out Airbnb, and I'm sure you've heard of some of these.
I have.
Desiree's laughing because she's heard about my trials and tribulations with this. But what sorts of downward pressure, if at all? I mean, what do you see? That trend, does it matter?
It is
interesting. It's a blip. The reason, the reason you want to affiliate with the brands is because I travel a lot. I've traveled all my career. I go to Marriott's. I'm going to go to the Marriott.com website, and I'm going to book my rate there. And you get 50, 60% of your customers from that website. Airbnb, I mean, it's, you know, it's a guy who's got a place to rent and, you know, puts on a website. You don't know what you're going to get. I tried to rent over the holidays, actually over Thanksgiving, through VRBO, which is similar.
Yeah.
And I was on my way driving down to Miami, which we rented this awesome apartment in a great building in Miami Beach. And on the way down there, I found out that that apartment that I rented didn't exist. So you're not going to have that when you book with a hotel.
Yeah.
Between, it seems to me, and this is my experience with it, is that between the points and the reward systems you get with the big chains, and also this notion that you're going to be someplace you're not familiar with, but the room will be familiar enough to.
And that's what a brand is, right? Yeah. It's, you can go and you're going to have the same experience. And so that's why hotels need to be refreshed. That's why a new product, whether it's an old box that's been refreshed or it's new build, is always going to do better and get better returns because people like that.
Mm-hmm. So how much does marketing, you're really depending on these big brands and their marketing. How much does that tie into this value?
Well, for us, it's important that we affiliate with the right brand.
Mm-hmm.
And there are weaker brands out there that don't do well, but we pay them for that. I mean, that's how Marriott International, that's how Hilton, that's how they make their money.
Right.
They charge us a percentage of the revenue. So we rely on them completely for that.
Okay.
But we've had enough experience across brands to know which ones work better than others. And
right.
So that's why when we buy a hotel, you know, we like Hampton Inn, for instance. Mm. Great brand.
Yeah, it is.
People
good
are loyal.
Breakfast.
Yeah.
Good breakfast, everything. You know, Courtyard by Marriott. There are certain brands that we just know are going to work. And you have to know that it's going to work in that particular, submarket as well.
Right. Interesting. So any other information that you want to share with us today? Any investors out there? Anything they need to know?
www.stonehillinvestors.com.
Yes, that's right.
I can remember that.
Yeah, it's very easily. So, well, thank you, Rob, for sharing your story today. It was really great. Good information out there.
Great. Well, are you going to take us out here, Desiree?
Yeah, I will do that since you brought us in.
Okay.
And we'll wait for Kevin to start the music. There you go. Thank you so much. This is High Velocity Radio, Business Radio X, Sandra Bean and Desiree Scales.